for December the 9th, 2022, we talk about Pentiment, Call of Duty Warzone 2.0, Warhammer 40K Darktide, and much more. Welcome to Level 438. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Dennis.
Thank you. I'm back rejuvenated, Disney-fied.
You were
all of the time.
You were on the high seas, were you not?
I was. I was cruising. To quote a joke from one of their Disney, you know, stage shows, watch it, you're Disney cruising for a Disney bruising.
Huh.
That went over real well with the kids. So
I gotcha. Did they prepend Disney onto other words?
It's like the Smurfs.
Yeah, basically. Mm. No, it was a really good time.
Nice. No, how did the kids enjoy it?
Oh, they had a blast. And, you know, a cruise ship is the perfect containment field for energetic young kids, especially because with the Disney ones, they have like a play area that just has babysitting from like
high
9
fences,
a.m.
They can't climb over. Yeah.
But from like 9 a.m. to midnight, it's just like this mecca for kids where they have, you know, playgrounds, video games, characters come and hang out. They have group activities. And so the kids were just like in that most of the time and having a ball.
Did they try and stay? Did they try and stow away?
No. We've done 5 day cruises before. This was the first 7 day cruise we've done. And our consensus was like, nah, 5 days is probably fine.
Yeah.
Like by the end of it, everyone was pretty whooped.
So if you mention Song of the South, do they make you walk the plank?
Yeah, I think so. No, it was like Christmas themed or holiday themed, I should say, because it's, you know, it's that time of year. And that was fun because they just had like Christmas carols and festive music playing the whole time, which I've kind of successfully avoided that before we went on vacation. And so it was like the right way to step into that season. So
yeah.
It was a grand kickoff for Christmas tunes.
Were there a lot of references to Beauty and the Beast, The Enchanted Christmas?
None, surprisingly. I don't know how they missed that.
Boo.
None to the Star Wars holiday special either. Now that's Disney, right? So
mm-hmm. Yeah,
I can't believe they left that out.
I'm trying to think how many like excommunicated Disney things can we bring up?
How many purged?
Do you go on and be like, wow, this ship is just like the time Donald Duck fought the, you know, insert slur for Japanese people?
Oh jeez.
I was going to if the timing was just slightly different, I was going to say did the Below Decks crew perform a mutiny like the prisoners in Andor?
Oh, yeah.
are the people who are basically indentured to work on those boats, are they allowed to watch the more revolutionary works?
Oh no. notably on stage they did Aladdin, and you know, they changed the lyric of the opening song of, instead of "Hey, it's barbaric but it's home," "Hey, it's chaotic but it's home."
Oh, that's such so, sorry. I will go on, that one's bullshit.
That's literally
the opening song is literally the like same scenario as, you know, the cantina scene in Star Wars, and no one pitches a fit. Sorry. That's my one regressive, like, they got too woke thing.
Yeah. You know, so the itchy trigger fingers on some stuff. It's you're going to get some false positives. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Oh, the more notable in that show, though, is they had to like put down the curtain because of technical problems.
Oh no!
Yeah, Jafar's mic stopped working, and so They were very professional about it. Like, you know, everyone kind of exited quietly and the curtain went down. Oh, we got technical problems, and then went right back up.
Yeah.
And then later in the show, it had to come down again right before like the big Whole New World number.
Okay.
And I guess like Aladdin was going to jump on the like magic carpet machine, which is, it's a very elaborate thing, especially to have on a cruise ship. Because essentially they've got like a see-through screen in front and then a screen in back, and the carpet's on like a big mechanical thing that like turns and whirls around like it's flying. So really technically cool. But you know, it's like time for it to show up, and it doesn't show up, and then the curtain goes down, and then the curtain comes back up in a couple minutes, and it's a different Aladdin. The understudy had to switch in mid-show. And we actually met the guy, get this, the guy who played Genie and was phenomenal, by the way, went to CCM at University of Cincinnati.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and apparently the original Aladdin did too. We like met him on the ship, and our kids actually like had him sign a card. Like they went around and got character signatures, and they were excited to have a I don't know if he was from Cincinnati or not, but yeah, that, like knew Cincinnati that they could get an autograph from. So that was fun.
Yeah,
but I guess the original Aladdin felt dizzy before he got on. They said it was just like, I don't want to hop on machinery if I'm feeling bad.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So understudy went on, which is great, except he kind of forgot the opening lyrics to A Whole New World.
Isn't that just the title? Okay.
A partial new world.
it was like watching a celebrity sing the Star Spangled Banner. Like they go to the later line too early and then realize they have to sing the exact same thing again. So that was fun. And you know, everyone's in a good mood, everyone took it in stride, and we all laughed about it. But it was definitely some cruise productions going on.
Yeah.
I was highly entertained.
It's more entertaining when things go wrong.
Well, it is. And to the Genie's credit, like the first time he was back on stage interacting with Aladdin after they swapped out, he comes, he's like, Aladdin, Aladdin. Later on they like hug and he picks him up and twirls around. He's like, oh God, you're heavier than the other guy. He did a great job rolling with it.
That's interesting because of all the characters in that show, Genie would have the license to be meta.
Exactly. Yes, it worked perfectly.
No, that's good.
Yeah. So that was a blast.
That's really cool.
The cruise ships have a restaurant called the Animator's Palette. I don't know if it's at Disney Parks as well, but it's like there's screens all around and they do really cool stuff with that. Like one of the nights, you draw a character on your placemat and then they take all the placemats and animate them.
Oh, uh-huh.
So you watch your characters on the screen. Like that was super cool. And then the first night we were in there, they had a like a VTuber style version of Crush, the turtle from Finding Nemo.
Okay.
Like animated, like live animation thing with, he would like swim around and talk to all these people from the screen and you would like have live conversations with him.
Hmm.
And that was just, I mean, so freaking cool. He asked Milo, he's like, what's your favorite surf moves, little dude? And it's like, I like doing a loop the loop. He's like, oh, radical, dude. I love loop the loops like this. And then the turtle swam a loop the loop. I'm like, what in the world? Like, how do you plan for that? Really cool.
I'm sure it came up in testing. I'm sure if you ask like, oh, what's your favorite move? Like there are people who like just say, just okay, we're going to bring in 50 kids and we're going to see what the most common ones are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But man, I mean,
you have that one kid that's like, avert Ollie McNally.
Yeah. but yeah, I mean, he chatted. So we like Barrett's birthday, our youngest, is tomorrow as of recording. And so this was kind of a birthday cruise for him, and like Crush, you know, celebrated with him about that. And it was just like really cool. So I have a dearth of video game stuff to talk about, but that's about as much as I got on the interactive entertainment front.
Nice.
And man, it was pretty cool.
And the cruise ship is not real life. That is a manufactured experience.
Yeah. Yeah, you're telling me. I wish the calories weren't real. Am I right?
Are you allowed drinking on a Disney cruise?
Yes. They actually, I don't know if all cruise lines do this now. They let you bring alcohol on.
Oh no. Most do not.
Yeah. So you can bring a 6-pack of beer or two wine bottles and you can re-up at every port.
I was going to say, that's enough for like one day.
Yeah. So they're making kids and adults' dreams come true on this cruise, it sounds like.
Yes, we are. Yeah, they we had some fun. And, you know, the weird thing is they still have, like, you know, drinks for sale and wine packages and stuff. And it's like, dude, you let me bring my own stuff. I want to bring my own stuff.
Yes.
So that was fun.
Yeah.
I know. I do like the idea of, like, Disney-themed cocktails.
I'm sure they have them.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was an entire, they had, like, Frozone's smoothies, and half of them were alcoholic, so.
Yeah, of course.
Those good times.
I forgot to say Pixar was a thing. That's...
Just assume it's Disney, dude.
Yeah, that's the safer bet at this point.
Did they have any, like, Marvel or Star Wars stuff at all?
They did. So, in terms of, like, screenings, they screened Wakanda Forever. I wasn't able to go over and see it, but they had it playing. They also had a first run of the new Pixar movie. It's mental Teflon for the name. Strange World, I think.
Oh, the one that underperformed, but apparently is actually pretty good.
It is good, yeah. And I'm sure there's detractors because of claimed wokeness.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. Bullshit. It was a fun movie, and I'm glad I watched it with my kids. Like,
this really is cool. Why we can't have nice things.
Well, yeah, it's interesting, though, like the story is very much about, like, you know, fatherhood and interactions between, you know, so it's typical, like, Pixar aimed at the dads movie.
Yeah.
But it was just like, you know, watching it with your kids, you're like, okay, yeah, this gives us some really good talking points after, like, this mm-hmm. is good.
So not to veer into politics too much, but this is technically the show hasn't started yet.
Okay.
Did you see hey, we haven't started the grind or whatever.
These are new rules. I like it.
Yes.
Yes. Did you see
what did you change while I was gone?
DeSantis's lawyers had to define wokeness.
Yeah.
Defined it as what, thinking there is structural inequality and we should do something about it.
Oh no.
yeah, it's really good to get them to get them to just come out and say it like that.
Perceiving reality.
It's almost literally the whole, like, that meme that we should make society better somewhat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so that was the Marvel, the Pixar. They didn't screen a single Star Wars movie that I could find. And I'm so pissed off because I've started watching the Star Wars movies with my kids.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, sweet. Like, we watched A New Hope and we can do The Empire Strikes Back, like, on a big screen on a cruise boat. Hell yes.
And then nothing.
And then never was available. There was, like, a Star Wars area of the kids zone. So that was there. They got to meet and talk with C-3PO. So that was fun. But cool. that was as much Star Wars as I saw.
Yeah.
So, oh well. Oh. And no Andor spoilers. I'm like six episodes in or something like that.
I'm about to watch. Well, I mean, if you're six episodes in, you've already seen one of the tensest episodes of television ever. Yeah. I've not been impressed with a Star Wars thing since. I mean, like, Last Jedi did it a little bit for me, but I finally, enough people that I trust said, "Hey, watch this." I'm like, oh, this is everything I wanted this to be.
Yeah.
I think. I was ranking them, and for me, it was probably Andor, Rogue One, the animated stuff, The Great Ewok Adventure. The original trilogy, The Great Ewok Adventure, Star Tours, the new trilogy, and then the prequel trilogy.
Yeah. All right. To give you a sense of, like, how disconnected from Star Wars stuff I had been, I had no idea that Andor was a character from a previous movie.
No, I didn't realize that either.
Oh, wow. What?
Your second favorite thing, David.
Yeah. I don't know who any of these people are.
It's a prequel for one of the pilots, like the main pilot guy from
Rogue One. I hated that movie, and I remember that character. Yeah. It opens with him killing a person. It's like, yeah, this is your hero. Great.
Wait, the movie does or the series?
Rogue One.
Okay, well, then both the movie and the series open with him.
Open that way. Yeah, no. My theory
it's the new opening crawl.
My theory
the
is
opening
that
crawl away from your murderer.
Yeah. The quality of a Star Wars whatever is directly or inversely proportionate to the number of Jedi.
Yeah.
Word.
We should keep moving.
I had more Star Wars thoughts.
Okay. hey Ben, what you been up to?
I'm gonna keep it brief. I watched Atlanta. It was great. Season 4. I'll keep with the TV theme.
Is that the last one? Is that the last? Okay.
Yeah, peaks of season 3 in my opinion, but season 4 is still good.
Nice.
Is this a show about like?
It's something Disney doesn't own yet, so it's hard to find, I guess.
it's about people who live in Atlanta. It stars Donald Glover.
That's kind of dark.
That's like a
what? Hey, I've been to Atlanta.
You live in Alabama though. Like what is this?
Yeah. Atlanta's like an hour away. I've been there. That's dark.
That reminds me, I need to check the results. Okay, Warnock is ahead as of right now, but it's still early.
Yeah.
Okay. By the time this comes out, people will already know likely.
Yeah, I'm hoping by the time this comes out, my joke was not appropriate.
I mean,
the headline that got me was like conservatives start to sour on Herschel Walker as the election results come in. I was like, yep, they will stand behind any buffoon, asshole, terrible person. As long as they're effective, and they start to sour when the results stop coming in. That sounds about right.
I did love his whole like werewolves versus vampires speech.
The stuff he was saying there made sense to me. It was not that's not something you would say at an event. Like you should know if most of everything that you've ever said in the past, I mean, let's say the majority of his adult life, everything that he has said is concussion words. Like it's just concussion words, and you should know you gotta not talk about vampires and werewolves in front of people.
But that's why voters like him. He shoots it straight. He says what's on his mind.
Yeah,
his concussed, addled mind.
I feel bad because he is actually like probably maybe the only person I have that was like a quote unquote like sports hero to me, like you know someone that I thought was really cool because of his accomplishments as an athlete and stuff.
Yeah,
but yeah.
It's a shame. He could have just lived that life as a private citizen. You know,
yeah. I learned that lesson when I said, "Oh, I really like Dennis Rodman because he shares my name."
Yeah. David, how about you? What you been up to?
Not really a whole heck of a lot. I've been taking a serger class.
What is serger?
That's like a type of industrial sewing machine that's used for stretch fabrics.
Okay.
So like knits and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just do like all sorts of random stuff. You can make like a t-shirt in just a couple minutes.
Maybe not
a couple minutes, but yeah, it's a variant on a sewing machine that is incredibly useful for certain tasks, basically.
Gotcha.
Sweet.
Trying to up my cosplay and clothing game.
Nice.
What was the first thing that you made using this?
First thing that I made with that was actually a crop top.
Nice.
Cool.
So yeah, some experimenting with like rib knit fabric, basically. So
you knit it to your ribs? Oh man, yes. You're using it wrong.
No, you actually knit it with a pair of ribs.
No, you don't. So you don't knit things to your ribs with a serger. You knit things to your ribs with surgery.
Ah, okay. Mm.
That's a common mistake.
I mean, I think like now we see, do they come from the same word?
While you look that up, I'll do mine. I haven't been up to anything, but I do want to let people know that next weekend, as you're hearing this, is Duckstream. Yeah, raising money for the Transactive Gender Project. What is mistakenly called Duckfeed? I mean, I've called it Duckfeed East. I started doing that back when everybody was kind of over roughly in the same direction, but Duckfeed non-Portland, let's say. So the whole thing runs from 9 p.m. Eastern on Friday the 16th of December all the way through to 9 p.m. Eastern on Saturday the 18th. Our shifts, for people who are listening to this and want to see me and want to see the level folks, we're going to be on during the day, so 9 a.m. on Saturday through to 9 p.m. and then 9 a.m. on Sunday through to 9 p.m. We're going to be doing some multiplayer stuff when we have, you know, folks around. I'm the only person who's tied to the chair, let's say. I wanted
Ooh, it's going to be that kind of stream.
I mean, you got to make the money somehow, you know?
So coal by way of Amaranth. I like it.
How much do people need to donate for you to get in a hot tub on stream?
I mean, a lot.
Enough to buy a hot tub.
How much do they need to donate for you to wear a horse mask on stream?
I mean, I'd have to buy a horse mask. So
I can make that happen.
At least as much as a horse mask costs.
I know many furries. I can make this happen.
I think Dennis is talking about one of the rubber ones.
Yeah, Dennis can talk about whatever he wants to talk about.
It's a non-kink-shamed podcast.
I'm not a, you know, I'm taking no stances. I wanted to let you guys know what I'm going to be doing for the solo time. Normally I try to beat a horror game, you know, pick one and then just try and run it over the course of the weekend. I've played a lot of the big ones, you know, big series and stuff like that, so I've decided what I'm going to do is what I'm calling random Resident Evil. I have gotten to work randomizer mods for the first four Resident Evil games. So both classic Resident Evil 1 and the remake, the HD remaster of the remake. So except for the remake, and I think except for RE4, and I'm getting too, only too specific for a lot of them. So for all of them, it randomizes enemies and items that you have. So you fight stuff where, you know, in strange places. But at least for the for 1 through 3, it also randomizes NPCs and dialogue lines. And what you should know is the engine classifies a bunch of stuff as dialogue lines.
Oh no.
Like zombie
screeching
mode.
Tires.
Yeah, zombie mode. Like, screams of pain and such. So like it ends up being like this just Dadaist.
It's very Lynchian.
Yeah. And like the lines aren't timed out, so you get these, you know, somebody will say something that doesn't follow, and then there's a long pause as they as they gesture through the timing of what should have been there. And then they'll just go, "Oh!" So I'm gonna randomize which of those I play. We're just gonna go. I'm gonna try and get a few other randomizers going for non-Resident Evil stuff, but it's gonna be fun.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Oh man.
So something that implies that the past was much more horrifying than the present. The word surgeon is derived from the word for basically means handiwork.
Okay. I mean,
so it's like basically, you know, you go down to the hardware store and prepare for your surgery.
Yeah, I mean, the surgeon, the dentist, and the barber all used to be the same guy.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Go to the one with sharp things.
Go to the cutter. Oh, so, I mean, this has been one of the longest preambles we've ever had.
Yes. This is what happens when I'm gone for too long. Officially hasn't started yet. Established.
So we've got to do the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with...
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, I'm going to throw to you.
Yeah, I mean, given I was traveling internationally without Wi-Fi for most of the time, I haven't been playing a ton, but I do have some fun stuff to talk about. So while I was on the cruise, the thing I played most was Dawncaster. And I think I've mentioned Dawncaster briefly before.
Card game.
Mm-hmm. Card game, roguelite. Slay the Spire, like, really. And I think
so. When does it become a Deck of Wonders, like?
Aha, that's phase three of my take over the world plan. Random thing on that, it's to yank us back into the preamble. Stuff is arriving at the distributors this week and will be shipped out to backers basically as soon as it does arrive. So I'm kind of just checking my email, refreshing to see when they say go. So yeah, Deck of Wonder is going to be in people's hands really soon. That's exciting.
Nice. I might be able to, you'll be playing it soon.
Yeah. So yeah, anyway, Dawncaster is a Deck of Wonders like, that I've enjoyed on my phone. Most notably, it plays without needing an internet connection. And so I just went through and tried to beat it with, all of the characters. I think there's six different classes. I'd only beat it with one at that point. And now I've beat it with all but one after the cruise. So that's cool. The thing that I kind of realized while I was playing the game, at least on the normal mode, I haven't tried any challenge stuff yet, is that it, like a lot of deck building games, it comes down to finding a way to break the deck, right? Or, you know, get an infinite combo or get something that just does insane amounts of damage, get your deck size down small enough that you can reliably draw that combo. And then you basically like win the rest of the game. You know, you can play the rest with your eyes closed. And I was really impressed that I did that a different way with every single class. Even though it's like the same pool of cards, there's three colors of cards, and the six classes are like the three single colors and then the three combinations of colors. Mm-hmm. And each time I won, it was through a different way of quote unquote breaking the game. So I was very pleased with that as like, okay, you know, it's not just the one broken combo that you can kind of shoehorn yourself into every time. It felt like different and creative ways to you know, make it work. So, some of the time it was like taking the basic attacks that you start with and finding ways to like level those up incredibly high. Other times I was, you know, getting rid of all of those and drafting, you know, new combinations, cards that would stack damage. Found a way one time to kind of bounce one card back into my hand again and again and again, and just it got stronger the more times you played it. So that was fun. Just all that like card game goodness. It was in full force. So that kept me entertained for most of the cruise. I've got one class left, the Seeker, that I've got to beat the game with, and I think I'm probably done. Mm-hmm. But definitely recommend it. It was like $4 or something, so worth the price of admission.
Nice. Love something breakable like that.
Mm-hmm. So I also, you know, I wanted to talk about Slay the Spire just because I've mentioned before, I'm doing like a play by post of it on Reddit where I do, you know, one move a day and have people vote on what I should do. And when I was without Wi-Fi for the majority of the days of vacation, that got kind of hairy. So it was like the days we were on islands, I was like, get off the ship and just run for an internet cafe or like run for the first Wi-Fi I could find. And screw you, Disney Cruise Lines, for having $36 a day be the price of being able to have connectivity on the boat.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Just highway robbery. And it was like, you know, oh, you can have the $12 a day tier, which is still like, what the hell? But it only gets you can like check Facebook. And then it was like, you know, $24 a day, you can check Facebook and YouTube. And then, you know, $36 a day, you could do other stuff. So
because they figure they're getting people who have to work. So therefore it is.
Maybe. I, yeah. Yeah, I just, you know, you're in for a penny, in for a pound, I guess, is their business model there. I resisted. I never bought it. I just would kind of binge off of whatever Wi-Fi I could find. And that got us through. And what was really fun is the community, the subreddit for Slay the Spire, they were like really good sports about it. And like the days I wasn't connected, I'd come back and they had done a bunch of memes and funny stuff. Like the amount of math people do on every single post, like calculating out probabilities and planning turns in advance, is just insane. Like if I ever was worried about being the smartest person in the room, I am very confident I am not when it comes to Slay the Spire. But yeah, so that's continues to be a lot of fun. We beat the first boss. So we're through act one and we are into act two. And, notably, like the beginning of act two is like really, really rough. So I think we're going to make it through the first combat of act two. I don't know if we'll make it through the second. We'll see how far this thing goes.
So does that mean is act one, did you make it to the top of the spire or how does this work?
Made it to the top of Exordium, I think. So yeah, there's
three maps. So it's like the first map.
It's okay. You got to romance the spire, you got to trick the spire, and then you slay the spire.
I don't know how to interpret those verbs that you just said.
but yeah, so continuing to have fun with that, and then my final one, and I guess technically kind of the big new release that I've been playing, I saved it for last, is Warzone 2.0. And I didn't see, like, Ben, have you checked this out? Or has anyone touched the Call of Duty Modern Warfare bonanza?
I'm Googling this to make sure I know what it is. This is Call of Duty.
Yeah.
This is Call of Player Unknown's Call of Duty.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2's Warzone 2.0.
But it's not the same Modern Warfare 2 that came out back in 2009.
Right.
Yeah,
right. This is name soup right here. This is how wrong it can go. When people asked how wrong could it go if we just start throwing colons in there willy nilly. But yeah, it's basically I think I'm enjoying it, and the reason I'm enjoying it is I didn't play a ton of Warzone 1. The consensus seems to be like, hey, if you were hoping that the sequel was going to shake up the formula in some notable way, you're going to be disappointed. But that base formula still is kind of solid. So if you haven't burnt yourself out on the Warzone format already, it's nice to have a new influx of players and some polish put on top of something that worked already. So
I have a question. Is this the multiplayer that you're talking about specifically, like the battle royale type thing that they have?
This is the battle royale. Yeah. So I think it's only the team deathmatch style multiplayer, and maybe not even that.
Okay.
That you have to buy the game for.
Because don't they have Blackout in this one as well?
The
battle royale.
No, the three things I've seen. Soup. Yeah, Warzone is the battle royale. There's Shoot House, which I think is just the team deathmatch. And I think that's gated behind buying the game. And then there is also a third and new entry, I'm pretty sure, called DMZ. And this is a map that you drop into, and it is a lot of DNA in common with the cycle, like the old cycle that I actually liked, where you and your squad are going around, you're doing contracts and kind of looting and earning money and accomplishing objectives. And not explicitly in conflict with other players, except for a few contracts. That's like either hunt another team or take out a high value target or what have you. But you have to opt into those. Otherwise, it's majority PvE. I think this is kind of Escape from Tarkov style. You can only bring low level weapons in with you, then you just got to pick up and find stuff on the map. If you extract with stuff, you can bring it back in. But if you die, you lose all the stuff you were carrying. And therein is the tension of like, okay, how long do I stay to do missions? Or when do I just pull the ripcord and go to an extraction zone? Especially noting that extraction zones tend to be well guarded. And if there's going to be people that are hunting other players on the map with you, they're probably going to be waiting in an extraction zone. So there's a nice little tension there. There's also like higher level stuff that unlocks the later you stay. So, if you want to stick around and get the really nice loot, you got to risk that your you know, in more conflict with other teams. It's got the what was the game that we played a little bit, David? The Hunt.
Oh yeah, yeah. The Bayou Weird West game.
Yes, it's like that, only, you know, dressed up in modern military fatigues. So good times. That's actually been the mode that I've enjoyed more. It's just a little bit more laid back. And you know, the people I've been playing with are people that I know outside of the game. So like, it's a good way to just hang out and you're not as intensely involved the entire time. The one thing I'll say is I wish that the AI enemies were a little more difficult.
Mm.
And the reason is that, so, you know, you drop in and as long as you're fighting AI, like, you're Superman, right? You're a super soldier. You can stand in the middle of the street and gun people down and not really worry. The problem is that puts you into a habit of interacting with the map that you get lulled into a false sense of security. And when you run into an enemy team that's actual other players, you're not being as careful as you should be. You put yourself in compromising positions and suddenly you're dead just because you were being an idiot and forgot that there are other people on the map. So I feel like if the enemy AI was dialed up just a little bit, like made you think a little bit more, it would cause me to be so much more prepared for when we ran into actual other players.
Yeah. Can you tell when a enemy is a player or not?
No. And that's actually the conversation that frequently happens is like, vehicle approaching, is it AI or is it people? And you're like, okay, how are they driving? Is it like, you know, are they?
How many pedestrians have they hit?
Yeah, exactly.
You're doing like just an on the spot, like, micro version of the Assassin's Creed multiplayer.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, not that you would ever try to blend in by pretending to be an NPC, but it is that very much like, how scared should I be right now? You know, should I be running towards them or running towards cover? I'm not sure which.
I love the version of this game where they have the AI constantly trying to learn to act more like players, and they just start acting more and more irrationally and erratically. Just like,
that's great.
Doing ramps on their vehicles and stuff.
No one would fly a helicopter upside down like that, or would they?
It'd be the first thing they do.
Yeah. So that's been a good time. One of the notable features that I think is new to Warzone 2.0 is proximity chat.
Okay.
And you can actually invite people to join your squad or ask to join someone's squad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really cool idea. I think you all already know exactly how proximity chat actually goes 90% of the time. Just a toxic wallowing in the worst language and attitudes. But the 10% of the time that it has been, you know, not that, it's been really cool. So like, you know, running into someone in DMZ and just being like, hey, how's it going? We're not gonna fight. Okay. All right. Yeah, like, you know, and actually like steering away from conflict by talking to them.
Yeah.
Insane. And then likewise, so, you know, when you get downed in the main battle royale mode, you go to the gulag and it's a 2-on-2 fight. I think in Warzone 1, it was a 1-on-1 fight. So 2-on-2 fight, the team that wins gets to go back in, except they're just sans equipment. And the people that die are out of the battle royale for good. However, about a minute into this fight, the jailer will arrive, and this is like a heavily armored super soldier guy with a minigun, who's like, you guys are taking too long, hops in and starts attacking you and like flushing you out, forcing the issue. If all four of you band together and kill the jailer, all four of you get to go back into the battle royale.
Huh.
It's like a mini prisoner's dilemma or whatever it is. And so it's only happened to me once, but getting everyone to take on the jailer instead of each other is a really cool experience.
Hmm.
So, you know, it's,
can you stop after the jailer spawn and just kill the other team and then go back in?
You can. Yeah. Once the jailer spawns, you can continue to fight the other team. And if you take too long overall, you time out and everybody, leaves, everyone dies.
Okay.
Aww.
It is funny. They like frame it because you very clearly get gunned down, or you know, headshotted with a sniper rifle, and then the voiceover is like, "All right, you tried your best. Let's get you back to base." I was like, "Wait, is this Nerf Wars? Like, what happened?"
Yeah.
Well, and also your base is apparently a dystopian prison.
Yeah. the second time you're downed. Yeah, it's weird. One of those things where it's like, all right, let's not try too hard to make everything diegetic. And I appreciate that. Like,
yeah.
It served the experience better. But yeah, so I'm having a good time with it. It's more fun to play with people, you know, like that's always going to be the case. And if you just have a really high threshold for verbal abuse, you might have one or two cool interactions that are not verbal abuse.
You have to opt in to Prox chat.
Yeah. Like if you just eat a, no, that's too vulgar. I gotta think of a new analogy here. Yeah. I mean, if you are willing to dig through just a pile of dog poop, you might find an M&M in there somewhere.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Yeah.
I like how the fact that it took you that long to think of an analogy shows that you've been on proxy chat for a while now.
Yeah. but yeah, that's me.
Cool. No, I just I don't have any questions about that. I just have to say, when you were laying out the different names and what they were a part of and stuff, I just wanted to scream, "What box do I pick up at the store?" Like that's just like all of these sub products. Like that can't be like. Mm-hmm. How is that allowed? How did anybody at that company decide, hey, this is how we're gonna? It's nonsense.
It's because the people who are making those decisions stare at this product all day, every day as their job for probably years. And they've lost all sense of perspective.
Okay,
also, cool. Nonsense sells.
Fun fact.
If someone buys the wrong product, then they have to buy your product again.
Ah.
Fun fact, I didn't realize that Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, the one that just came out, they had to give it the II, like Roman numeral 2, because otherwise it would be the exact same name as the previous one.
Okay, that clarifies it.
All the other ones have kind of skirted around it, because it's a, yeah, whatever.
Call of Duty Modern Warfare E.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. David, how about you?
So I've actually gotten a new one. I picked up a Warhammer 40K Dark Tide.
Oh, cool.
So this is the new Vermintide like, which was the old Left 4 Dead like.
Mm-hmm.
So this time, instead of being in the Warhammer universe and, you know, medieval ye old times, this is in the, you know, far future. And, it's a very interesting new take on it. This time around, instead of playing as, you know, bespoke characters, you're creating your own character.
Okay.
And that's actually, I think, one of the coolest features of it, because when you go to character creation, you start out by basically establishing your character's backstory. What planet were they born on? What, I guess, kind of environment did they were they born into? How did they, you know, grow up? And then what event was like a turning point in their life? So it can be things like, you know, oh, I was a hive orphan who was captured by slavers and then, you know, had, you know, bouts of madness that I interpreted as divine intervention, you know, divine messages or, okay. You know, just, you know, all these different things, and then those directly affect your character's, you know, voice lines in when you're playing the game. So, you know, as events are happening, your character, you know, if you come from a military background, you'll, you know, potentially make comparisons between the current events to you know, to experiences you've had previously in the field, or, if you grew up as a in a hive gang and in one of the mega cities, as you're going through this urban slum, you might have some greater insight into how what was going on there, that sort of thing.
And so, does this inform your abilities as well? Is this like how they get at a class system, or is this in addition to that?
No, so this is in addition to the class system. So the class system, you can play as either a veteran sharpshooter, which is your generic kind of Call of Duty dude, a preacher, which is a faster melee focus that similar to the witch hunter in Vermintide. Mm-hmm. Just kind of a religious zealot. The psyker, who's basically a scion. And for people who aren't familiar with the 40K lore, in the far future, humanity has kind of regressed back to a hyper exaggerated version of like Dark Ages superstition. Mm-hmm. So the other characters basically view the psyker as a witch.
Okay.
That also sounds like a cheat so that they could just recycle assets from Vermintide, but
And then the last and maybe the most interesting class is the Ogryn, which is basically a giant ogre. So within the lore of 40K, the humans view mutants as mutations as being a physical form of heresy, a physical sign of heresy. And so mutants are basically executed on sight. However, there's certain mutants that are deemed, probably because they're useful, as being close enough and are called abhumans, and ogryns are one of them. Mm-hmm. So they're basically very big, very strong, very loyal, but not very smart. And this is where we get into probably my favorite thing I've done with the background system so far, because my character, who one of the cutscenes establishes has to use his fingers to count to four. My backstory was that he was an apprentice scribe.
Okay.
And there's actually, I found a whole, Reddit thread, people, discussing, what is your character's kind of, headcanon justification for why your, Ogryn was a scribe. And it ranges from, it's well established that one of the potential backstory items is literally just like there was a clerical error and my entire neighborhood just like legally ceased to exist.
Okay.
So it's well established that in the future bureaucracy is just this Kafkaesque nightmare. And so some people are speculating, I explained that my Ogryn, was a clerical mistake and, they executed the last person that complained about a clerical mistake. So just everyone went with it.
It's easier to go along.
Right. Or other people just figured, maybe they just need someone to just lift massive piles of paperwork and carry them around.
That's good. Yeah. All librarians are ripped in this universe.
Exactly. I think my favorite though is someone just said, I just figure, he's like the 40K equivalent of Hagrid from Harry Potter. You're a heretic, Harry.
He goes and finds other people to tell they're special.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, other than that, so the actual gameplay, the main difference from the Vermintide is that there's a much stronger focus on range combat, both for your characters and for your enemies. The way that ends up playing out is you have sort of a regenerating shield called toughness that, you know, that takes damage before your health takes damage, and it will slowly regenerate over time, or you get a big bonus to it whenever you kill an enemy, but only with melee. So it tends to be kind of a, you use your guns at the start of an encounter, and then once you start getting low on this health, you engage to melee combat.
Mm-hmm.
And the end result of it, and the way they kind of present it is, and this is very consistent with, you know, the way 40K has traditionally presented things, it kind of models the combat sort of on like a World War One trench combat type thing where, you know, everyone has guns, but once the fight starts, everything goes to shit and everyone just starts swinging, you know, shovels and whatnot. But it is interesting because, you know, there are, you know, now enemies that will, if you'll let them, will stand back and just take shots at you and whittle down your health.
Mm-hmm.
So it's much, I guess, a much more dynamic, you know, gameplay.
You have to be conscious of threats from more ranges than just this is a, you know, one of any flavor of rats who is running directly toward me.
Exactly, exactly. Also, it feels to me like at least the classes are a little more unique. You know, some of the standouts are the Ogryn. His grenades, instead of actually tossing a grenade, he just tosses a box containing all of his grenades. And so, you know, compared to the other classes, you know, you only get one, but it's really, really big.
So do you save them for boss fights then, or?
Yeah, boss fights. Whenever you need to take down a single target enemy. Similarly, the Psyker has the ability to just make enemies' heads explode. But it takes about 2 seconds to charge. So the end result of it is it's not really a viable primary weapon, but you can pretty much any of the equivalent of special infected, except for like tanks, you can pretty much just choose for them to die, if that makes sense.
Is there a cooldown on the ability, I take it?
So what it is as you use the ability, you build up peril, and your psychic abilities, depending on how you build out your class, often get more powerful as your peril increases. But once it gets to 100%, if you use another ability, your head explodes.
Okay. It sounds like the mage from Vermintide.
Yeah, yeah. It's very much, it's kind of their equivalent of the mage. And from what I can tell, you know, this is partially, there's a lot of carryover with Vermintide because, you know, it's, you know, made by the same people, that sort of thing. But also because, you know, in the actual 40K and Warhammer games, there's a lot of carryover.
Well, yeah, it's same world, similar systems. Yeah,
exactly. The one thing I will say, probably the other than the character creation, I think the thing this game is most successful with is the atmosphere, and in particular, really doubling down on the fact that, you know, humanity, I guess, is maybe technically better than the people you're fighting, but they are not the good guys.
No, I mean, they produced, I mean, it's a horrible empire. It's fascist.
Yeah. And, you know, so I guess the last question you get asked in character creation is you start out as a prisoner. And, you know,
how many 5-year-olds do you think you could kill?
No. That would be too dark even for this, maybe. No, you have to say, like, why you're in jail.
Okay.
And your options are, like, sedition, insubordination, faithlessness, something else. But then the actual what did you do are just laughably hilarious. So, for example, for sedition, your crime was someone overheard you complaining that the corpse paste they feed you didn't taste good, and you were subsequently sentenced to execution for sedition.
Checks out. Need more corpse paste.
Yep. And that is entirely with the, you know, consistent with the you know, lore of the universe. Similarly, the game game's equivalent of, like, drones, you know, the ubiquitous, you know, near future, you know, futuristic, like, little hovering robots that you use to hack things are made out of literal human skulls. The healing posts that you can find periodically are someone's reanimated torso whose arms have been replaced with, like, robotic arms with syringes on the end.
Horrifying.
Like, yeah, you again are very much not the good guys, and it does a really good job of that.
Well, and my understanding of that whole universe is it's like those things that if they showed up in Scorn would be horrifying and unsettling, but taken from the angle of, like, a Metallica album cover where people are going to see and be like, hell yeah, that's so metal.
Like, yeah, exactly.
That's the vibe, right?
There, yeah. I mean, it's the meme with the guy looking at a space marine and says, yeah, space marines are cool, and then there's a line that going over his head that's it's the actual message: fascism is bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I will say, I think this is clear, but they definitely know fascism is bad. You know, this is not, like, you know, some sort of I don't know, Duke Nukem Forever, where they didn't quite get it.
Right.
But it's a combination of that, a combination of kind of it being played for laughs and using comedy to be able to get away with things that you couldn't get away with if you didn't use comedy, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Taking refuge, being audacious, yes. and being audacious. Yeah,
exactly. The one, the biggest downside I'll say is their cosmetic and unlock system is really, really problematic.
In terms of being, like, predatory, or?
Yes. So to be fair, the game only costs $39. So, you know, it is a cheaper, game, but, the cosmetics that you can straight up buy in game are just, you know, with your normal currency are incredibly basic. There's basically one outfit that is just, you know, colored slightly differently that you can, you know, buy the different colors. So my character is, you know, still using their default prison uniform.
Okay.
And I want to say, you know, someone did the numbers and, you know, buying a actual outfit from the shop costs like $10 or something.
Yeah.
And also you have to buy a premium currency, which doesn't come in the, you know, you can't just buy the amount you need to buy one outfit.
Oh, you've got some dangling space bucks. Yeah.
Right. Which they came out, like, yesterday and were like, oh yeah, that was a mistake. We meant to have another tier you could buy that was exactly the amount, but we forgot to enable it.
It's a joke. When you make that face at me, it's a joke.
Yep. So, yeah, and similarly, like, it previously, at the end of every mission, you, in Vermintide, you get a random piece of equipment. Now it's like, at the end of every mission, you get some money that's maybe enough to buy a piece of equipment, and then sometimes you'll get, I guess I've played probably seven or so missions so far, and I've gotten a piece of equipment from one of them. So just, it very much seems like their progression system really needs some work.
I don't know if it's that great with me that this is a, that it is a $40 game that still has those kind of extractive, kind of things going on.
Yeah. Isn't it also like really buggy on launch, or they fastly fix those things?
That's everything now.
I have heard from everyone else that is really buggy. I haven't had any problems, but I think I've just been lucky.
Mm.
The one thing that is not there on launch is Xbox and Steam players cannot, Game Pass and Steam players cannot play together.
It's the same way with Deep Rock Galactic.
Yeah, I don't even know, like, it seems like you would have to try to make your netcode do that, but I don't know.
It might also be a platform, like a platform restriction kind of deal.
Yeah, I don't know. I sort of wonder. I wouldn't wonder this if the rest of the microtransactions thing wasn't so predatory. I kind of wonder if some of that is like, I intended to play it on Game Pass and then bought it on Steam so I could play with my friends. It's maybe a thing where it's like, we can get this money from Game Pass and then not actually have people play it there because people will pay us to be able to play with their friends.
Yeah, I mean, it's a possibility.
Is this on Game Pass?
Yep.
Oh, okay. There it is. Huh.
No, that's a bummer. But Posh launches just the way it goes.
Yeah. So they say that eventually they're going to fix that. You know, I don't know. We'll see. Right now my verdict is it's a game that does some really cool things that has some really questionable decisions.
Yeah. I mean, are they making that alongside, like, are they continuing to support Vermintide 2, or are these kind of mutually exclusive products?
I'm not sure. I mean, you know, the servers are still up, obviously, on Vermintide 2. I don't know if they're still making any new content for it. Right. I think Vermintide 2, even like a year ago, was kind of end of life, where, you know, they weren't making any more big expansions. They did some trickling out of like some new class variants and stuff, I think, as DLC, but I think mostly that's done.
No.
I don't know if they've announced whether they are going to make a Vermintide 3 or not.
It sounds like you might be playing it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that very well may be.
Yeah. Do you have anything else besides that?
Nope. That's all I got.
Cool. Ben, how about you?
All right. I got two. God of War, the first one. I hate played that until platinum. And then.
Oh, wow.
you didn't have to do that.
I haven't done it in a while. I think Skyrim was the last game I did that with. But no, it's like, you know, there's just like a bunch of fetch quests. So you get small drips of content with that kind of stuff. And then most of it was in service of leveling up to level 9 so that you could actually take on the bosses that are scattered throughout the maps. I did okay with it. The last two bosses, I just put the difficulty down the easiest setting. Even that had to restart a couple of times for each of them. But then after beating those two, then that was all the content that was left in the game. So I was happy enough with it after that. I guess.
Is that the final story bosses, or are there other quote unquote final bosses after the final story boss?
There might be like some random bosses in areas that like respawn if you go there, or it's like a boss with a big health bar at the top of the screen. But those are all the ones that are supported with like dialogue and cutscenes and that type of thing. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to spoil. There's like equivalent to Valkyries in this game without. There's not any like narrative spoilers or whatever to talking about them. They're called berserkers. They're just like, I don't know. They function the exact same as like the Valkyries did in the previous game.
To give context, the Valkyries were like optional challenge bosses that you could to go like, out of your way to find.
Yeah, exactly. And then most of it was like one per realm of the 9 different realms. So, anyway, that game, man, I feel the same way. I think I talked about this before, but it feels very similar to Subnautica Below Zero, where it's like more of a really good game from 2018, but just like, so in that sense, it's like, okay, well, that's cool. This is a copy of a really good game. But like it itself has not really done a whole lot to differentiate itself from the first game or do anything original, I guess. There's like small quality of life improvements, but yeah, it's very mixed feelings for it. This should not get game of the year, though, I would say.
What about story wise? Because at the end of the first second God of War was like really set up some interesting story hooks.
Yeah,
I'd be curious if they actually.
The story's okay, but it's like everything. I don't know. There's like I don't want to spoil too many things, but like there's a in general overarching loom in this game where it's like at the end of the first game. So spoilers for the 2018 one, if anyone wants to avoid that. At the end of the first game, they see a mural depicting Kratos dying, or like sacrificing himself or something like that, and so. The entire time on this game, there's this like looming thread of like, are we, you know, we're taking these steps to fulfill this like prophecy where you die. Like, should we try and stop doing whatever we're doing? But then there's this conflict where it's like the thing that you want to do right now is also what the prophecy says you'll do. And so there's this overarching looming thing, but I don't think it really stuck the landing as far as like doing something cool with resolving that sort of tension. Mm-hmm. To me, it just was kind of like, I don't know, the ending was just kind of generic and not too impactful, I guess.
Yeah.
Without going into specifics, kind of what's shown for me about the first, second God of War is the like father-son relationship.
Yeah.
Like, does that continue to evolve in interesting ways, or have they completely transferred the plot over to this MacGuffin
of
the prophecy?
So that might be something that I'm like blind to when I'm playing the game that you probably hits you in a different way since you have two sons who are similar in age to Atreus and stuff.
Not in the second game though, right? He's like a teenager.
He's older now. Yeah. They do a good job of aging him. And, the voice actor I found out is, the kid who's in mid-90s, the movie that came out like 4 or 5 years ago, the Jonah Hill movie. So I like the fact that he was around the age when in the last game, and he's like around a similar age in this game, so he's like kind of an age appropriate person. He's probably like maybe 5 years older than the character in both times, but it's I don't know, close enough, I guess. They age Atreus and they show like growth in his character. As far as like the father son dynamics, it's the same way as I think any sort of relationship dynamic in games like Uncharted and stuff like that, where it's like, you know, there's tensions, there's cutscenes where they're reunited and are on the same page, that sort of thing. So it's like,
let me guess, their differences cause tension, but then they find common ground.
Yeah. There's nothing like crazy original that you're like, oh wow, I've never seen that in a game before, sort of thing. So, shrug. Anyway. I don't want to over talk about this game. So I've talked about it a few times. It's just kind of there, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Some people like it. Great. Some people might not like it. Okay. That's fine. Whatever.
That's the most Ben review I've ever heard.
Yeah, I don't know. I want to talk about the other game that I played because I think it's more interesting. So the other game that I played and beat, I guess in the last week is called Pentiment.
I want to hear about this.
Yeah, so this is a game that came out last month on my birthday, coincidentally. So it's about a month old now. It's made by Obsidian, and the kind of the unique things about it is it has a very unique art style. It kind of almost looks like the Monty Python animations from back in the day, which is fitting because the game itself takes place in 16th century Germany. And it takes place in a town, like kind of a small village that has a monastery. I don't know if that's the right word or not. There's an abbot in a religious like castle that's next to the town. And so it's kind of like two groups of people, the townsfolk and then the church, which taxes the town and has monks who live there and nuns.
So it's funny that earlier we were talking about scribes because that's what this is. And the art style is made to mimic like illuminated manuscripts, like the illustrations from ancient document kind of deal.
So how many books can you lift at one time is the question.
I think they only do one at a time. No, there's like there's a scene with like maybe three at once.
But if you were Ogryn, could have lifted all the books.
Would have been a real game changer. Yeah.
But there are no Ogryn because it is like this is making an attempt at being. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, you weren't there. You don't know that.
This is true.
All right. But you touch on one of the strengths of the game, which is the amount of like depth they go into details of the time period, which I assume is correct. It's very detailed. I'm not an expert of the era, so I don't know how much of that's correct or not, but it's very detailed.
It sells it.
Yeah. Down to kind of like the dynamics of the town and their relationship with the church. Like things like the fact of, you know, like the town's very dependent upon being taxed by the church and being taxed by the miller of the town. So that they can grind up their grain to have food during the winter. Like throughout the narrative, like those sort of dynamics come out, tensions between towns members. So not only is there a lot of interesting like historical details in this, all the characters in the town are really fleshed out. There's a certain amount of this game that I don't want to talk about because I don't want to like spoil.
It's a murder mystery.
Yeah, and even that is like a tiptoe beyond what
I can take that back.
No, that's fine. That's like the part in Finding Nemo of the reefs where it's like I don't want to go beyond that to say anything too much about the game because part of the game. So it is somewhat of a murder mystery in the game. Or there are elements of the games where you're trying to solve murders. But the mechanics of the game and kind of like how it works and how you can interact with the game, you're kind of supposed to figure out as you're playing it. Because like I could state like, oh, I think this is how you should play the game. But that's after having figured it out. So I don't know if this makes sense or not. But
so this is Obsidian, but like it's very specifically like Brian Fargo coming in after like, you know, like saying like, OK, let's do like a combat free Fallout kind of deal.
Yes.
Like classic style Fallout.
And so that touches on another strength of the game is this is very much like a choices matter sort of game, or at least rather a choices feel like they matter sort of game. Specifically, I don't think I'm gonna go back and play this a second time because I really enjoy having the story that I created. And I don't really want to see where the rails are or see what you can change, even though like I know that there's probably some things that you can change, even some dramatic decisions you can change and some you can't. But I really liked how the story resolved for my playthrough, and I'm happy with that. And it's like if I played it again, I think it would kind of like cheapen the experience. Because again, like you, how you spend your time in the game and like who you ask questions and stuff like that, you get better at that meta over the game. And I think it would be a disservice to try and give advice on how to do that or give information away on like how one should go about doing that. So anyway, I will say like a few of the maybe shortcomings of the game, and there's only like the one that I can really think of is the fact that it takes a long time to do anything in this game. So just walking around the town takes a long time, and just getting through dialogue prompts with people takes a long time to the point where it's like, so it took me 20 hours to beat this game. And I think it's like a $20 game. But I think I could have probably beat this game in like 10 hours if things were fast-tracked or more quick to play. Like that. So that kind of gives you an indication of like how much fat there is. Is that the right word? Yeah. In the game? So that's a piece that's like a little bit annoying, but part of the reason why everything's kind of so slow, when you talk to people, their dialogue is like handwritten out on the screen.
Poison. This is
actually kind of like a positive stylistic thing, is based on who you're talking to, the script varies. So like, for example, if you're talking to a peasant, you have this barely legible, like kind of muck dialogue. They give you an option at the beginning where you can turn this on or off if you have like any sort of disability or reason why this would affect your gameplay of it. But if you talk to like a monk in the abbey, it has this very dressed up script, looks like a scribe wrote it, you know? Mm-hmm. So they use that to good effect. This is around the time where printing presses are starting to becoming in fashion. So some characters, their dialogue will be printed on the dialogue tree. So I like this because it gives a sense of immersion to the time period of like just through the dialogue, which I thought that was really well handled. But the trade-off of it is like, if you're talking to someone, it's handwriting things and you can click once to the handwriting and get done faster. But yeah, it's kind of slow. And so it's a little bit tedious if you're trying to like get to the content.
Yeah. The reason I say that's poison is just if you have to watch it, I don't know. There's just something people can read fairly quickly by and large, you know, and if they are doing that animation to make a point, like, I would be pressing that button to make it go fast.
Yeah. And I'm doing that like the entire time in the game. But that also is probably another reason why I don't want to do a replay of it, is there would just be so much dead time of, mm-hmm, talking to people and you already know what the response is, but still having to go through it.
Right.
So that's like the main argument against the game, but I think everything else is like pretty strong with the game. Very immersed in the story. It's kind of divided up into three acts. By the end of the third act, I was pretty hooked, and I think I stayed up late that night just to finish off the game. Mm-hmm. The characters, The main character is Andreas Mueller, who is somebody who does like painting. So you're an artist, and so you're working in the religious, the cathedral or the monastery, and you're doing paintings that are being commissioned by, like, I don't know, rich people or religious people or stuff like that. But you're kind of in training. And you're staying with a peasant family in the town. And so you can kind of see both worlds, where you can see like what they're doing on top of the hill in the monastery, and you can see what's going on in the town with the commoners. You get to choose your backstory. So similar to like what David was talking about with in the new Vermintide game, is you can pick your background, you can pick your college major, you can pick your personality type. So just to give you examples of this, I thought this would be fun. So I RP'd my trip from over the summer. So I picked that I went to Belgium, and I picked hedonist because I drank every day there pretty much. I picked like logician for like college major. And then there wasn't a good choice for person. There's a few other things that you can pick as well on top of that. So, they do a good job of reinforcing, though. For everything you pick, there are dialogue options that reinforce those like pretty frequently. Mm-hmm. And then kind of like the metagame is, there's similar to like the Fallout games, there's a lot of times where you need to try and convince somebody to do something, to, you know, either further an investigation or further something that you're trying to get done. And the way that's handled is they show you basically all the things that you've done up to that point that influence it, with either like +1 or -1. And it's not a die roll or anything. It's just strictly, hey, did you meet this benchmark or not? And if you did, it passes. If you didn't, then you don't. But it gives you enough information that you can kind of go back and maybe try different things if you want to try and pass that in a different run. Mm-hmm. I like the way that that was handled. Another comparison I was going to make is, this game feels somewhat similar DNA to Disco Elysium, which I know is very high praise for the people who listen to this show. But it has a lot of similarities there in the fact that, one, it's kind of slow to move around the entire map, but then... Mm-hmm. Two, you're spending a lot of time talking to different people and trying to convince them of things. And even though there's not a die roll, it feels very similar to that sort of gameplay as Disco Elysium. Yeah, I think that's most of all I want to talk about with the game. It's really good, though.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to watch somebody else play the game as well. So if anybody's here decides to play it, maybe on a stream on Friday night, let me know and I'll pop in. So.
Yeah, this is pretty high up there for me on a game that I want to. I mean, it just that Disco Elysium comparison is, you know, really salient for me. Love mm-hmm. that game. You know, I'm not so much, you know, the art style. I can kind of take or leave it, but mm-hmm. just in terms of like the actual like effect that will have on the overall, you know, how the story feels and stuff. But like, I don't know, like it kind of seems like it's right at my alley. Mm-hmm. I don't know, just like the only bummer for me is that there's no combat, but also whatever, like if they that wasn't the game they wanted to make, I'd rather they not shoehorn it in.
Yeah, I yeah. did not miss combat at any point in playing this game, so
yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have any questions, especially if there are spoiler sensitivities and stuff.
Yeah, I just think it's funny. I think between this game and was it Case of the Golden Idol, like those are like the two best like narrative games. Those are like high up on rankings for game this year, especially over things like God of War 2, even though that mm-hmm. has so much more production put into it.
Yeah,
I like how we've collectively decided that we're just not going to call it Ragnarok.
Oh yeah,
it's God of War 2.
Yeah,
I mean,
if the game itself doesn't respect Ragnarok, why should we respect the title?
Yeah, I mean, if it's not the last game, I'm not calling it Ragnarok.
Oh man, but was that all you had, Ben?
That's all I got.
Yeah. And surprise, I don't have anything. Where I am thick in the middle of prep for Duckstream and trying to get those mods to work, and also rounding out Western RPG month on Watch Out for Fireballs. Ooh. Playing we did Torment Tides of Numenera, and then we're also doing Shadowrun Hong Kong mm-hmm. on there. Both really good games, both very demanding on a time from a time point of view. Mm-hmm. So all of my like discretionary I am like messing with the computer time, it has been Rocksmith and like relaxing playing Walkabout Mini Golf, both of which are games that I have talked, one of which arguably isn't a game, the other of which I've talked about plenty. So
one is which?
Yeah, I was trying to figure that one out too.
Oh no, Rocksmith, insofar as it is a it is like a teaching tool kind of thing. Like I use it as like visual tablature that has kind of adaptive difficulty, like working up to actually learn songs. And Walkabout Mini Golf, which is like mini golf is a game, but there's only so far you can get by saying basically what I said the last time I talked about it, which is this is actually just really solid mini golf done in VR. And it is just extremely enjoyable, but that's about as far as the criticism can go.
It's funny how feel centric VR is. Like it feels really cool in VR. Mm-hmm. There's only so many times and ways you can say that before it's like, just, you got to strap on a helmet, man.
Yeah. You just got to do it. Like I could talk about like, yeah, I consistently, you know, I've gotten pretty good at it. I can hit the ball ends up where I want it to a lot of the time, and it didn't at the start. Like, mm-hmm. you know, kind of like if you played mini golf for a while, you would get good at it. and it's just like, oh, it's just like it's a facsimile of mini golf. You get it, right? Mm-hmm. So apologies for not having more, but there we are.
It's all good. We had a huge intro to the show, so that padded any shortcomings we have later in the episode.
Yes.
You know what you have to do, Cole, is go to a real life mini golf course to see if your skills have improved.
And play VR mini golf there. The other
people. Just make a real nightmare show. Yeah. well, yeah, that's me. And that's the segment.
Multiplayer.
Now it's time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
You know, I'm realizing it wasn't a question this week so much as it was an order, which was predict the biggest headline coming out of the Game Awards on Thursday.
Yeah. So we should say we're recording this on Tuesday. What is it? So Thursday is when the Game Awards are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You'll notice by virtue of the linear nature of time, we don't know what happened. So this is one of the last possible moments to get your predictions stored in amber, so the next day everybody can see how right or wrong we were.
Can laugh at us. Yeah.
we're asking our producers to look into that whole linearity of time thing.
We're going to see what we can do. Sean writes, Bethesda announces Skyrim, another year, another edition for PC and consoles, only adds more horse armor, $70, of course. There's a running theme of cynicism throughout a lot of these.
What?
Yes.
I mean, if there's any Bethesda stuff, it's probably going to be Starfield, maybe more of that. I don't know. Let's see, David, what does Eli say?
Eli says, with any luck, it'll be that Genshin Impact won everything, and we all realize we should stop letting Jeff Keighley's monument to corporate advertising take up so much air in the room.
I mean, I can't disagree. I don't know, like that did. So I didn't look at the nominations. The only news out of this that I have seen, like from the nominations, was of course there was discourse about Elden Ring being nominated for best narrative.
And there's
a discussion to be had, but that's the only news story that I saw, and it made me want to rip my eyes out. But did Genshin Impact get nominated for a bunch of stuff, or?
I don't know. For me, it's a trailer show.
Yes.
Could not care less about the awards.
Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Greg say?
Greg says, overrated and underrunning AAA games dominate awards again, despite brutal employee work history and being released too soon. Award-deserving indie games get overlooked once again. Oh, wow. This comment is stuck in time.
Yeah, no, there's one thing you can count on. It's worker abuses.
That's one way to beat the whole linear time thing.
Yeah, going back, well, you know, centuries.
If we wind up fixing that linear time problem, we'll have already fixed it. So
you'll know. No, that's, I mean, the fact that we're talking about this shows you that we have not fixed it yet.
Damn.
Or that we fixed it and we're just lazy.
We decided we liked it better this way, actually.
all the alternatives are so much worse. What the fuck? Candide was right, or whatever. No, Candide was the work. What am I thinking of here? Best of all possible worlds.
Yeah, no, that's Candide.
Yeah,
and Christopher Nolan was wrong, and Interstellar's good the way it is. I don't know. He tried to make time travel. Sorry. Go on.
Oh man. Wait, I need to see here. Voltaire. No, Candide was the novella. There we are. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Dennis, what does Jeremy say?
Jeremy says people will be sad that Elden Ring won instead of God of War. With an excellent picture of it's Miyazaki, right?
Yes.
With they call me 007, zero easy modes, zero microtransactions, 7 masterpieces.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Dark Souls 3 is on there, so, I mean, 6, you know. You're still Sean Bean if you're 006, so that's cool.
That's right.
Case says, Bloodborne PC port. Joke answer. My real answer would be Marvel Spider-Man 2. Yeah, we're going to see that. I mean, if I'm talking like along those lines of something that would be cool to see, I want to see their Wolverine game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's been a Wolverine game, and it was good. I liked it.
Oh, the God of War one? Connected to Origins? Third
person action one. Yeah.
Yeah, the only good thing to come out of X-Men Origins.
Let's see here. David, what does Jack say?
Jack says, Elden Ring wins GOTY. Acceptance speech interrupted by redacted. Does let him finish, but says, God of War Ragnarok was one of the best video games of all time. Then as an aside, this is still timely.
I wish it wasn't. No, if Redacted got up there and said anything, it would be one of the most horrifying things you ever heard.
Yeah, remember when the dumbest shit he said was about award shows? That was so nice. I really liked that.
Depressing. It's not fun anymore.
I spend way too much time in the Hades subreddit because they refer to the final boss of Hades as Redacted. So I was like, wait, is this a Hades reference?
let's see here. Ben, what does Tyler say?
I insist you pronounce it Geoff.
Yeah, you're stepping on my toes, man. Geoff Cahigley announces Death Stranding 2, silently and desperately hoping for another cameo as a tear escapes his eye.
He's already been captured in Kojima's digital menagerie. Like, his soul is there forever, so it can be reused. I mean, here's my prediction. We're definitely going to see whatever Kojima's new thing is, like, that had been leaked. Maybe announced. I don't know. I'm curious about it because it's going to be a horror game. And that's also something that I am looking for. I don't think that we're going to get any more Elden Ring stuff. Color me surprised, I'd be happy to be wrong about that, but I think is it
gauche to debut stuff about your game at the show where you're up for awards?
No, God, no.
Does that happen?
I don't know if that helps or hurts the case. Oh, we'll just give you an award for the next one then.
Like those two functions are so like this is a show that is really at odds with itself. Like the fact that it is some, you know, like winter E3 in terms of reveals, but also the award. Like I think you hit on a key tension there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't mind the amount of like video game advertising that's in it. Like
that's the main event.
Yeah. I think one of my biggest complaints is the fact that they call it the Game Awards.
The like, definite article on that is, I mean, it's indefinite, but they're saying the Game Awards.
Like the Ohio State University.
Well, and I think also, like, it's just dumb because, like, I can, you know, I could go to the DVD store, which is definitely a thing people still do. And, you know, someone could, like, print on the cover of their DVD, like, you know, Oscar winning. But it wouldn't make sense for me to go to the, you know, wherever and be like, won a game award.
It won a The Game Award. do you have a prediction for this one, David?
Yes, my prediction is that none of the people who spent hours crunch timing for the game that wins are going to be there to receive it or are going to benefit from the award in any way.
But think about it. The producers and managers and, you know, visionaries, they had to be around a bunch of very unhappy people for a very long time. And that is its own kind of struggle.
Yeah. It's like the suffering of Princess Markle, right?
I guess. I don't know. Oh, man. Ben, how about you?
I'm going to double down on Greg's opinion and just say indie games will get overlooked, even though they have more creativity since there's not as much money in them, then they probably don't have as much pool.
I mean, the winner of last year I'd never even heard of, so I checked today.
What was the winner last year?
Like, It Takes Two or something, which I've never heard of.
Yeah, that was the it was from the Brothers and A Way Out.
It's indie-ish.
It's Double A. Yeah, but that was the mandatory co-op multiplayer game. Ben and I played it. We talked about it. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, that tips the scale to this is purely a trailer show in my mind, because they gave an award to an indie game or a less not as triple A game, but they didn't give a trailer to them, and so no one remembered.
I mean, also, how indie can you call it, because that was also published by EA?
That's fair.
Yeah,
EA also did Lost in Random recently. Like they've mm-hmm. got their indie game, well, at least running.
Small, yes. Like it's weird because any other, like if this was the music industry, there would be a sub label under EA. Mm-hmm.
So looking at it, I know, like, looking at the, you know, from 2014, it was Dragon Age Inquisition, Witcher, then Witcher 3 Wild Hunt, Overwatch, Breath of the Wild, God of War, Sekiro, Last of Us Part 2, and then It Takes Two. Mm-hmm. Like, those aren't particularly strong contenders, most of them. Like, I'm not saying they weren't good games, but, like, I'm not sure any of those I would say, like, oh, yeah, all-time classic. Like, maybe Witcher 3 and Breath of the Wild? Yeah.
It's because you're viewing them separated from the hype of, you know, that was going on while the Game Awards were happening.
Yeah, I'm just, like reading them that way actually seems much more damning than, like, anything else.
Mm-hmm. Dennis, do you have any do you have a prediction on this?
Yeah, my prediction is they're going to announce the Super Mario Bros. Movie game.
Do like a Street Fighter the movie the game thing?
Yes.
I'm still hope, oh wait, no, someone chose that as a news story, never mind.
Oh man. Well, thank you everybody for participating. If you want to participate in those in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you, Dennis, for posting it.
The end boss.
And now it's time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games, oftentimes that are exciting to us. Ben, rolling over naturally. From predictions and stuff about the video game awards, what's happening with Star Wars?
Yeah, a thing will be happening. Yes. They announced the next Jedi Outcast game. It is called Jedi Survivor, and it's coming out March 16th, 2023. So I'm excited. It'll probably be good. They did a good job with the first one.
Yeah. Yeah, that is weirdly soon, actually. I didn't know that was kind of in the Q1, yeah, like end of year Q1 kind of window. So that is a pleasant surprise.
Well, they already did all the hard stuff making the first one. Now they just got to pump more out, right? That's how it works, right?
I mean, they have a framework. It's, you know, next generation, you know.
I mean, that's how it worked for Dark Souls.
I mean, for a while. Yeah,
I don't actually know that. I just, it was an easy snark to make.
They had an interaction model from Demon's Souls, and they were iterating. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, second entries are famously good in movies and in games, I feel like. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm excited.
Yeah, that's not how it worked for Dark Souls.
Hey. Oh. This is retaliation for me taking a shot at Dark Souls 3 earlier.
Maybe a little bit.
Wait, you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Sorry.
We laughed David out of his chair.
It happens.
Yeah.
He's not denying it. Yeah.
I saw this image leak. Like, do we know where this came from? Like, just, it was this
probably
just
Photoshop, something like that? Sorry, that's not what you were asking.
I found it from Reddit, so it has to be true.
Okay, yeah. And it is as plausible as anything. I want to do David's story next because it is a positive development. This is what I'm really excited about. Hey, David, what's happening at ZeniMax?
Yeah, they are voting to unionize their QA staff.
Hell yeah!
Yeah, they've got 300 people. On their staff, and voting continues through the end of the month. Apparently, the QA workers at Activision Blizzard in Albany voted already to unionize. They voted the same day that this vote started, but if I'm understanding this correctly, there are only 14 people, so it was a quick vote. Okay. And was unanimous.
Nice. You know.
So, yeah, one of the interesting dynamics with this is that Microsoft has declared neutrality. And so, as I understand it, this is like an official legal thing you can do. And so they're not allowed to take a stand one way or the other. on unionization, so they can't do the whole, like, you know, mandatory meetings where we bring people in to try to scare you about unions, that sort of thing.
I mean, the union busting, like, meeting and stuff, that's an illegal kind of gray area. I think officially you are not supposed to try and suppress union activity. I think that it's cool if Microsoft is deciding to follow the law.
Yeah, yep. So apparently they declared this during the merger thing. So there's some speculation that they did it to try to, you know, make it more likely that the merger would be approved, although, of course, they're denying it. But at the very least, it does seem like they are legitimately, like, just being like, do the vote and we'll follow it. So, yeah, that's...
Are you referring to Activision Blizzard, or are you referring to ZeniMax? On the merger thing.
I don't know. I honestly don't understand that. I assume Microsoft is to video games as Disney is to, you know, movies.
Yeah.
I just assume Microsoft has merged with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to hear the news story where they say they're canceling their QA office because it's in a dangerous neighborhood.
Yeah. We were planning to fold that division in somewhere over time. Yeah. But I may be incorrect. Microsoft Activision merger. There we go. No, I was mistaken about this. The question I asked you makes very little sense. The theory is they declared the intention to unionize this particular office ahead of time, in order to possibly get the merger thrown out, or was it in order to get the merger to go through?
I think it was Microsoft declared they weren't going to fight unionization to try to make the merger more likely to go through.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, this is still relatively small. These are QA departments are important, but this is not like a massive portion of the staff. You know, so them allowing this concession that, like, hey, we're not going to pitch fit about this if it makes our already really shady and shouldn't be allowed to happen deal go through. Yeah.
Yeah, although it does say in this article that the neutrality agreement extends to all Microsoft employees as well as Activision Blizzard employees.
No, it doesn't. So, I mean, it hasn't. Effectively, it hasn't.
Yeah. But. Well, yeah, they go on to point out that, yeah, Activision... Well, I mean, but Activision Blizzard did shady shit is no longer news.
Yeah.
That's like saying, you know, Redacted said something horrible.
I don't know. Just critical support and solidarity with anybody with these workers, and also with anybody in the industry who decides to organize.
Semi-related, but Polygon published a printable zine on zine, whatever, on like unionization in video games.
Rad as hell.
Which is really cool. I read through it. My only complaint with it, which I feel like is understandable, but I'm not sure entirely honest, is they, you know, talk about like, oh yeah, you know, union busting might happen. I feel like you should be honest and be like, oh yeah, your employer will try to ruin your life.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Like, they will do everything possible to hurt you.
Yeah. They're going to make an example out of you. See Chris Smalls.
Illegally, right? As well.
Yeah. 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 They'll literally hire the Pinkertons to come after you. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Ben, it can't be illegal if you have money.
Oh yeah, I forgot. It's American. Yeah,
if you're capital, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Good God. So let's see here.
This was a positive story. Small unionization steps. Yeah. Let's go. You know,
yes, there we go.
Can I make some positive comment, not to get too mired in this, but
yes.
I saw an interview with Chris Smalls where he was talking about, like, because he organized many Amazon unions, like, after being fired from Amazon. But he was talking about
it. Yeah.
Yeah. But he was talking about, like, how to look positively. And like every day he's just like going to bus stops to try and get people to like sign up to like say that they want to be in a union. He's just just has such a positive attitude about everything. He's like, you're gonna have some hard days, but you just got to get up and go out the next day and keep doing it.
He has a really good he is a very effective leader and a very good face for the cause. So let's move from that positive story. Dennis, I want to hear, so what's happening? What's Mario up to?
Yeah, I'm going to surprise you guys. I'm going to stay positive on this. Okay. So, you know, every article I could find on the trailer is like, oh, movie looks great. Everyone sounds great except Chris Pratt.
Pretty much.
Yeah, but let's start with those first two statements and then I'm going to get to the second or the third one. This is done by Illumination, and like their experience absolutely shows. This is gorgeous. And the voice work for the characters is amazing. And from what little has been shown of the story, it just feels like they are using the canvas of the universe of Mario in a really interesting way.
It's a multiverse game, Brent.
It's a multiverse
story, rather. Yeah.
Yeah, there's lots of galaxies, lots of worlds. It kind of just folds in the way you interact with the games, I guess, into the story. But you know, listening to Jack Black as Bowser, seeing Peach as like fearless leader out there, it's just really fun and uses like I said that palette in a really cool way. So everything that I'm seeing in this trailer just makes me excited to watch the movie. And I have watched this trailer way too many times. I saw it myself, and then I saw, you know, showed it to one kid, which meant I had to then watch it the third time, showing it to the other. Then we put it up on the big TV because we wanted to watch it like it was a trailer in a theater. And you know, it's gotten dissected and point out the Easter eggs and all this stuff. Like, and I think I started going to that third point of Chris Pratt is not the right person for that role. Mm-hmm. You know, Charles Martinet deserves to get a AAA movie for the literal hundreds of games he's done as Mario.
Yeah.
And I would never take that away from him. Like that is, he is Mario in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll start with that and then say, taking it as read that they gave it to an A-list actor because that's what Hollywood does. I don't think Chris Pratt is shitting the bed with his voice work.
So I haven't heard the additional dialogue. So basically everything that I heard was,
yeah, I feel like it's worse.
Yeah.
Really? So here's where I landed on it is like when he's just talking, it's Chris Pratt, right? Mm-hmm. And then when he gets excited or does his wahoos or the screams and stuff, then it gets a lot more Mario-esque.
Yeah, and to me that's
Mario-tude.
Like that's
I don't think so, because really what we've heard in the Mario games is pretty much exclusively the exclamations. I can't think of one place where we've gotten like extended voice work from Mario that wasn't just the hopping and the jumping and the wahooing, you know?
I feel like this Mario trailer is like a mirror into our personalities, because I'm like completely down on it and cynical about it, but it's not anything. It's just, I don't like Chris Pratt. I don't like the cash grab thing. So that just makes me hate everything else. So.
Yeah. See, to me, it's just my take on the second trailer was like, oh, not only is it going to be a bad voice, but it's all going to be a bad voice that also does annoying sounds.
So you wanted him to go full Pratt, you know, never do a Mario voice?
Go one way or the other.
Okay.
You don't like the fence right. Wait, what is that? You know, be hot or cold, not lukewarm.
I think it's Mario enough. And I think at the end of a, you know, whatever 90-minute movie, you're not going to get tired of the over the top voice on normal dialogue. So,
oh yeah. I mean, I don't think that's what I'm going to get tired of. Yeah. I think I'm going to get tired of all of the anti-jokes of, wow, that just happened.
Maybe, yeah, I don't know. I'm going in with high hopes. We'll see, you know, we'll know when this comes out in, what is it, March or April? April,
it's April. Yeah. I mean it's all about expectation you know, just expectation setting and, you know, what do you go in and specifically for like the different, because like Pratt is the only cast member that I've seen people being like totally down on, like me, you know, I haven't watched that trailer, but like, I don't know. I want to see what Charlie Day does with Luigi. I think that's really good casting, you know?
So I felt bad. Luigi was not in the first trailer, right?
No, he was not.
So I found it hilarious that all of the headlines were for the second trailer were like, oh yeah, see the trailer where you see Donkey Kong and Peach with no mention of Luigi, which is the most Luigi thing ever.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I hope they do that all movie. I hope they're merciless about that.
That will be a funny joke. I really hope they lean into it. I was incorrect. God. Luigi appears at the very end.
He's
cowering against a door, but you don't get to hear it again. You don't get to hear Charlie Day do his voice.
So if you can stand watching a movie with a person that is a little too cartoony for today's hellscape, I think it's going to be a good time.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, I'm going to watch it because we're going to do it for Adaptation Decay.
You can't not. You literally can't not.
Yeah.
I do not plan on watching this movie, actually.
Ben!
Yeah.
There's nothing for me there.
It's a kid's movie. Like, would you say Ben if he said, oh, I'm not going to watch Sonic the Hedgehog?
Yes, I would.
Watch Sonic the Hedgehog.
I am going to do a Christmas Carol, but for video games on all of you, and you are going to be so happy on the other side.
So the thing I want from this movie is I want them to recreate one of the jumps from Mario Brothers where you have to sacrifice Yoshi.
Yeah, no, I want them to do it's all Super Mario 2, the American one.
Throwing rutabagas at people.
Yeah, throwing rutabagas at Shy Guys, you know.
I like it.
Yeah.
I mean, I always felt bad that, you know, we're, you know, beating down on shy people.
So I'm trying to think, like, I feel like Mario would be Ghost of Christmas Past. Sonic would be Ghost of Christmas Present because he's got to go fast. Who'd be the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come?
I still don't understand how either of what analogy you're making.
You're going to be visited by
Christmas Carol, but for video
games. Turning you
from a Scrooge.
So who represents death?
Yes, the terror of all that. The Doom guy? From the Doom movie.
No. I feel like it's gotta be someone from Fortnite. Like that's why I watch it. I realize, wow, I am old and, someday I will die.
But someone from Fortnite could be literally anyone. All of Marvel's in there, all of the NFL is in there. Like you gotta narrow it down. Other video games are in there. I think Sonic's probably in there. I don't know.
I don't know. Isn't there like a banana person or something?
So there were llamas at one point.
It's got to be something that leads everyone to realize that you are no longer young.
I've got to step in. The Rock didn't play Doom Guy in the 2005 Doom. Carl Urban did. The Rock eventually turned into the Cyber Demon.
Oh, got it. Yeah. Man,
that's a good correction. I'm not being sarcastic. That's I don't want to diss our man Carl Urban. I'll say that the best case scenario of a movie like this is like Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, where it's like that's a movie that's very well put together, but at the end of the day, it's a movie where it's like there's jokes and the message is like you should care about one another. It's like okay, cool. Like that's fine. And that could be fine, but like as far as like a movie goes, that's not a deep like amount of writing or parable or anything going on there. So yeah. I'm not interested in it because of that. But it can be good outside of that.
Ben, I'm flying you out here. I'm sitting your ass down next to my three kids, and you're gonna watch it with them in your lap and discover childhood again. Damn it!
It's a kid. Watching a kids movie with a kid is probably pretty fun. More fun than watching it on your own.
True.
That is fair.
Yeah. My story is not much of anything, really. I just thought this was interesting. Surprise, kind of like runaway hit this year. Vampire Survivors is getting a DLC expansion next week, coming out on December the 15th at $2. It is called Legacy of the Moonspell. The developer says it may or may not add vampires in, but, more importantly, more characters, more weapons. That's the most interesting thing to me. It's adding one huge stage, is what they say. And there's some story stuff, but then, you know, it's not a nobody. No, I mean, not nobody. I do not care about that. I want a new weapon and stuff.
Vampire Survivors is the Playboy of video games. You're not there for the stories.
Right.
See, I feel like I want the story of Vampire Survivors solely for the fact that Vampire Survivors should not have a story. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things where it's like, wait, this has a story? Now I'm interested.
Yeah.
Like, how are you pulling this off?
An interesting detail. So this new stage, like, it's going to have like multiple different kind of like, let's say, points of interest in it. One of which being a yokai infested village. Which is funny because I mean, the rest of the game is like super Italian. Yeah. So I don't. Yeah.
What? Isn't this game still in early access?
Yeah.
So this is DLC this is point, for like.
This is a point I was going to bring up. Is this basically feels like a price readjustment and not a DLC because they're like the game came out in October. Apparently, I checked the Steam page. But like they're adding 2 months of content, or it, like really what this feels like is that they're increasing the price of the game by $2, which is fine because the game's worth way more than $4 that it sold at. But it also still doesn't feel like it's a complete game. So it's like I'd rather them make a complete thing and then just sell it for $10.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm fine with them. But just like what's funny about it is like I kind of. You know, any price thing that they decide to do is okay with me because they released it so cheap at the start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like they released it ill-advisedly cheap. So it's like, oh, like adjust upward, like try and make up for that if you want to, if you can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess tell me what you think, but I think the play is like, okay, a lot of people bought in early for $4, like, release it at, well, I mean, I guess if you release it for $10, you miss out on all the people who already bought it. But it's like,
right.
The thing I get upset with is like, it doesn't feel like a complete game when it's, I haven't played it, I guess, since the October one. So I've still only played it, you know, from half a year ago or so.
No, but, it's still not complete.
Yeah. So I'd rather there be a finished product before they start adding DLCs. Well, and I don't mind paying money for that. But
so this is really hard to like, I think this gets at a really interesting problem, which is like, how important is polish and being finished to the fun of Vampire Survivors? Not at all. Like, you get this game for cheap and it's got a fun idea and is a great like little gameplay loop. And like, yeah, they could have fleshed it out more to try to justify a higher price point, but it doesn't like it was at the point that it was ready to put in people's hands and it was worth paying money for, and they did that. And like you said, Cole, they probably even did that at a lower price than the game was worth. So I don't know. It's hard to throw shade at them for, you know, going to a DLC without quote unquote finishing the game, because at a certain point, a finished game is important to being the game to the game being finished.
We gave you vampires and survivors. What more do you want?
Like, I don't know what I would have expected. There wasn't like placeholder, like something will be here later stuff in the game that I know of.
No.
So like, yeah, calling it unfinished is there's got to be a better word for that when you're thinking about the way games are just released nowadays.
It's like a proof of concept of like the core gameplay. But yeah. I mean, I guess you could end it at that, and it's something like Snake Doctor, but
the proof of concept is the fun part. Like anything mm-hmm. else is window dressing, and you know, most people don't need that to have a good time with Vampire Survivors.
I mean, in tech, we just call it Series A.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I just end up like the core loop was there, and I was never going to explore everything that was there. So I got my 10 hours out of it, and I just kind of saw that as, you know, good. I felt like the transaction was complete at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, but you know, we'll see. I'm curious what new weapons and stuff there are. I don't know if I want to fall back down that hole again, because that loop is very compulsive, but I know it's a popular game, and yeah, big changes for it. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Let's button it.
The credit.
Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in to this level number 439. Want to end on a reminder that Duckstream is happening let's see here, December 16th, 17th, and 18th. It's the 9th annual Duckstream. So next year is going to be the 10th one that we've done, which is wild to me. The details on that are at duckfeed.tv/duckstream, or you can just follow the Duckfeed Twitch channel /duckfeedtv. Or you know, Duckfeed twitch.tv/duckfeedtv in order to you know, get go live notifications and stuff like that. Yeah, there's that. And then also, since we're coming up toward the end of the year, keep an eye on our socials and in the Slack for the title of the year voting.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. So that should be plan is to have that out around the time this episode comes out. Go ahead and vote. This is a very self-indulgent thing we do every year, but it is still fun to do. Voting for what is the best title of an episode, including the A Toadies. So Toadie, title of the year, A Toadie, alternate title of the year. Kind of gather up the also rants, the nominees for a knockdown drag out fight between them. So watch out for that, and then do all of the usual podcast support stuff. You know how to support a podcast. Is there anything I am forgetting?
Don't think so. If you back Deck of Wonders, thank you, and the game should be in your hands in just a few weeks. Woohoo!
Fan, that is very good news. If you like, if you get those shipments out by the end of the year.
Yeah. That the only thing is if we run into holiday craziness, but I think we might get out before it. Yeah. All the big shipping rushes have already happened, and all the last minute shipping rushes are yet to come. So maybe we're hitting the window right. I don't know.
Yeah. Nice. Cool. Well, I have been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at DuckBeatTV.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me cruising the Bahamas.
I'm David Meismith. You can find me on Duckstream.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. All right. Who has titles?
I am titleless this week.
Okay.
I have a quote of yours as one of mine.
Oh my. Okay.
Needs more corpse paste.
David, you got one?
Nope.
I don't have one either. One that I almost wrote down was dangling space bucks, but
I wrote down two others, but they're mostly, I don't know if they work written. It was more just fun to hear them said.
Yes.
Which was, it won a game award. Won a the game award.
Okay.
And then the first second God of War.
I like Ooh. Both of those.
Yeah.
Do you want to do like by the laugh, it won the game award?
Yeah, I'd go with yeah. that.
That's fine by me.
All right.